Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the webinar on Foreign Portfolio Investors. SEBI introduces regime rollover for FIIs and QFIIs. This session is being organized by Nishit Desai Associates. The speaker in the conference are Pratibha Jain, partner, Nishit Desai Associates, Kishore Joshi, senior associates, funds, Nishit Desai Associates, Rishi Sancheti, senior associates, funds, Nishit Desai Associates. As a reminder, all participants' line will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions at the end of today's session. If you should need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and zero on your touchtone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand over the session to Pratibha Jain, partner, Nishit Desai Associates. Thank you, and over to you.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody, and thank you for joining us for a discussion on what's expected to be a path-breaking legislation for listed securities in India. SEBI has recently approved and released the draft SEBI portfolio, Foreign Portfolio Investor Regulation 2013 in its board meeting. And the draft of which was also released by SEBI in the same board meeting. Before we outline the key features of the proposed regime, I will hand over to my colleague Kishore Joshi to just help us walk through what the current regime was for us to be able to compare it to what SEBI has proposed.
Thank you, Pratibha. So friends, as you may know, currently, we have different foreign investment regimes under which foreign investors make investments into India. As far as the portfolio investments are concerned, we have the foreign institutional investor regime under which the FII and the sub-accounts registered with SEBI make portfolio investments into India. We also have the non-resident Indians, NRIs, for whom there is a separate portfolio investment scheme regime under which NRIs can make investments. Separately, even for the direct investments, that's the strategic investments, we have foreign direct investment regime. SEBI has also introduced FVCI, Foreign Venture Capital Investment Regimes. So there has been these multiple regimes under which foreign investors have been making investments. To just give a brief history of some of these investment regimes, as you may know, especially for portfolio investments into India, the government of India in 1993 started this FII regime. For about 2 years, the FIIs have registered with government of India and have been making investments. Subsequently, Securities and Exchange Board of India, the Indian Securities Regulator, notified the portfolio regime called the Foreign Institutional Investment Regime, under which over a period of time from 1995 onwards, hundreds and thousands of FIIs and sub-accounts have been registered and have been making investments. SEBI over a period of time have added some additional categories under the FII and sub-accounts. For example, they have allowed foreign corporates and foreign individuals to be registered under these regimes so that they can make investments. Of course, there have been certain difficulties for individuals to make investments under the FII and the sub-account regimes. So SEBI came out with qualified foreign institutional QFII regime, where under the high net worth individuals, the family offices were allowed to make investments into India. That's a portfolio investment. The NRIs, of course, for NRIs, there have been a separate regime, and hence they were restricted to make investments under the QFII regime, as also they could not register as an FII or a sub-account for making portfolio investments. There have been certain issues coming because of these multiple regimes. For example, under the FII and the sub-accounts, the individuals could not make investments. The SEBI has more or less been accepting the institutional investors are pooling vehicles for making investments under this. The NRI could not register under the FII regime. The QFII regime, as I said, which was introduced, could not take off because of certain tax issues. There have been some other issues. For example, the FII entity making investments under the FII regime and separately also under the FDI regime. The Government of India and RBI has clubbed those investments to the investment limit, which is given to FIIs only for the portfolio investments. So the investors who have been facing certain problems, as also Government of India from monitoring perspective, have been facing certain issues. So the SEBI has decided that they should try to rationalize these portfolio investments and try to bring it under some one regime. In 2010, they accordingly set up UK Sinha Committee and asked the committee to look into this aspect. UK Sinha Committee, of course, came out with a report, a very broad report. But probably what they tried to do is they tried to combine both the portfolio investments as also the strategic investments under the FDI regime. And they tried and they suggested that any investments below 10% should be regarded as a portfolio investment, and any investment above 10% should be regarded as foreign direct investment. And this was irrespective of whether the company is a listed company or an unlisted company. Naturally, this would have created a lot of issues, not only from the foreign investors' perspective, but even from the Indian regulators' perspective as to how they should be monitoring the portfolio investment. If any foreign direct investment is holding more than 10%, comes down to below 10%, how the shift would happen from the FDI regime to the portfolio regime. In view of this, SEBI has formed another committee in 2012, headed by K.M. Chandrasekhar, and asked them to specifically look into the rationalization of the different portfolio regimes. Chandrasekhar committee, of course, came out with a report at the start of 2013, and they suggested a combined regime, what is called foreign portfolio investment regime. This came, of course, in 2013. SEBI has taken up that FPI regime in their board meeting. They discussed it, and it seems we understand that a draft FPI regulation has been cleared by SEBI, and it is awaiting, of course, the final notification of SEBI. There, of course, are certain other issues before it being notified, but what probably we are going to do today is that let's try to analyze what are the different provisions under the FPI regime, how they may affect the existing FII and the sub-accounts and the QFIs, and what would be the issues that may come up if this FPI regime is being implemented. So maybe what I'm doing is I'm just handing it over to my colleague Richie, who can will take you through some of the salient features of FPI regime.
Thanks, Kishore, sir. As Kishore sir has already summarized for you the background on which SEBI has sort of come out with the framework for foreign portfolio investors, the schematics for the draft regulations have so far been so much so as to rationalize and harmonize all the different regimes under which foreign portfolio investments were being made in India. So while I would take an attempt to sort of summarize what foreign portfolio investment regime means, you would see a lot of aspects reflected from FII regulations, the qualified foreign investor, the QFI regime, and also the different committee reports that Kishore has referred to earlier, primarily being the Chandrasekhar committee report and the UK Sinha committee report that came before that. So to begin with, a foreign portfolio investor is one which is registered and regulated by a designated depository participant, and that is a term that we will further hear and discuss as this session goes on. A foreign portfolio investor is one which is registered with a designated depository participant under the authorization of SEBI. Now, as far as existing foreign portfolio investors are concerned, to begin with the FIIs and the sub-accounts, they can continue to buy, sell, and otherwise transact in Indian securities under the extant FII regulations. The expectation from them is that at the time of their renewal coming up, so as you may be aware that FIIs have to renew every 3 years, at that point in time, the rollover would be under the FPI regulations with the DDPs. In case of qualified foreign investors, the QFIs, the regime that was recently introduced by the regulators, though not under dedicated regulations by way of circulars, the expectations from them is that within 1 year of the FPI regulations being brought into effect, they would continue being registered or they would get themselves registered under the FPI regulations. And within a sunset time of 1 year from the regulations, they would have to compulsorily convert themselves under the FPI regulations. Now, getting into the nitty-gritties of who would qualify as a foreign portfolio investor. So while we are clear about the rules concerning the existing FII sub-accounts and the QFIs, if a new participant wanted to register itself as a FPI, there are certain eligibility criteria which have been prescribed. To begin with, the FPI applicant should be from a jurisdiction which has entered into a multilateral MOU with IOSCO, which is the securities regulator. Rather, the body which, under the framework of which the securities regulators from different jurisdictions are part of. That applicant should also be from a jurisdiction which has a securities regulator which has entered into a bilateral MOU with SEBI. Or if the applicant is a bank, then it should be from a jurisdiction whose central bank is a member of Bank for International Settlements, BIS. Applicant should also be from a jurisdiction which is not in the negative list of FATF. Apart from that, there are different categories which have been prescribed by SEBI. SEBI under the FPI regulations has mandated that there be a segregation of different FPIs applying different risk-based KYCs, investment guidelines and restrictions. So to begin with, depending on the nature and the background of that investor, it could fall under a Category 1, which is the least risk FPI, a Category 2, which is a medium risk sort of a FPI, and any other FPI which falls outside Category 1 or Category 2 comes under the all-inclusive Category 3 FPIs. Now, Category 1 FPIs include sort of governments, sovereign wealth funds, and institutions which are government-sponsored. Category 2 FPIs, interestingly, have certain parameters linked to them which are sort of attached to whether they are a broad-based fund and whether they are appropriately regulated. Now, broad-based fund to that extent continues to imbibe the same definition which was under the FI regulations of there being at least 20 investors and none holding more than 49%. Interestingly, what SEBI has now done under the FPI regulations is also sort of recognize the look-through principle. So it says that to recognize the number of investors into an FPI, you could look through an entity if that entity was set up as a pooling structure and with an intent to make investments. Apart from that, what SEBI has also done is sort of given a definition of what is appropriately regulated. Now, SEBI believes that what is appropriately regulated is if you are from a jurisdiction which is a member of IOSCO, and apart from that, you are in a jurisdiction, the securities or the banking regulator is supervising you. So basically, you have to be registered with a securities regulator or a banking regulator to that extent. Now, any other investor which wants to characterize itself as an FPI and sort of fulfills other requirements would fall under the Category 3. So this would include your charitable trusts, the foundations, the endowments, individuals or large family offices. Now, after we've discussed the categories and the broader framework for getting yourself registered as a FPI, the application criteria for getting registered is made to a designated depository participant, which will issue or grant a certificate of registration under authorization from SEBI. The application is made fairly simple. The process says that after making of the application, within 30 days, it is expected that the designated depository participant would revert back to you either with a confirmation or with any other queries that it may have. So, fairly, the process is simply well laid out. The only marked difference is that instead of SEBI being the entity with whom the applicant would liaise in, unlike under the previous regulations under the FII regime, it would now be the DDP which will be the single mode nodal sort of a entity with whom the applicant would be engaging into. As far as making investments are concerned, the same seem to be consistent with FII sub-account regulations where the host of different securities in which as an FII or a sub-account we could invest. It remains to be seen whether SEBI would come out with more fine-tuned regulations which would spell out that depending on your category as an FPI, could you make investment in select instruments or let's say a high risk FPI like a category 3? Can it only do limited investments? The key one here, however, is that as far as issuance or sort of holding ODIs are concerned, only category 1 FPI and category 2 FPIs have now been sort of recognized by SEBI as those who are eligible to issue or hold FPIs. A category 3 FPI cannot issue or hold an ODI. My colleague Pratibha will deal with issues that could arise with this sort of a paradigm shift, which seem to have happened. The next aspect dealing with the FPI regulations is those concerning clubbing. As you may be aware, the portfolio investment regime is a substitute it sort of repeats the existing FII sub-account regulations. So as an FII sub-account, you could not have taken exposure more than 10% of an equity of a particular script. So the regime continues. What now is the new regulation, so to speak, and it actually is articulated in law now, that as a category 1 FPI, if you are all part of the same jurisdiction, so category 1 was the sovereign wealth fund or the government bodies, etc., if they are from the same jurisdiction, it would be clubbed. The only exception is if SEBI or the government has entered into an agreement or a treaty which recognizes that the different entities, even though from the same jurisdiction, will be treated or looked as separately, then that distinction will be recognized. Apart from that, the another format of clubbing is that if the ultimate set of beneficial owners of the entity, the FPI, are the same, let's say there are two or three multiple FPIs, each having the same set of ultimate beneficial owners, then there could be a clubbing provision which could also trigger. While the current FPI regulations do not indicate the equity threshold at which the clubbing would arise, but going by the past circulars which were issued under the FPI regulations, we believe it would be at 50% as trigger. Moving on, as far as ODIs are concerned, the definition of ODIs continue to remain the same. These are basically any instrument by whatever name called, issued on securities which are actually held by an FPI, which are listed or capable of being listed on the global recognized stock exchange, continue being deemed as an ODI. And as I had indicated earlier, only a category 1 or a category 2 FPI could now onwards issue or hold ODIs and not a category 3 FPI. And again, the eligibility to hold an ODI is to be a person who is regulated by an appropriate foreign regulatory authority. Interestingly, the requirement to be appropriately regulated by a foreign regulatory authority are different for those of an FPI and that for an ODI holder. So if you are regulated by a commodities regulator, you would still qualify as an eligible holder of an ODI, whereas the same parameter, if met in isolation, may not qualify you as an eligible foreign portfolio investor. Moving on, a key sort of a positioning has been given to a designated depository participant, which would substitute sort of SEBI's role earlier, where it would engage with the applicants whether to grant them registration under the FPI regulations to monitor their investments, and subsequently, if any differences are found between what is expected from a compliances perspective, should they be up for these registration from FPI regulations. Now, a designated depository participant is one which is registered as a participant with a depository. In India, currently, you have two depositories, NSDL and CDSL. To be registered as a DDP or recognized as a DDP under the regulations, either of the two depositories will have to send a letter of recommendation to SEBI in recommendation of the applicant who is intending to be a designated depository participant, and that mechanism would be carried out to be a recognized DDP. As far as KYCs are concerned, a DDP is expected to carry out in line with anti-money laundering provisions, the master circular that was issued earlier, and the FATF requirements. Having said that, what was clearly brought out under the Chandrasekhar Committee report, that the KYC should be commensurate with the risk perception of the applicant FPI, that seems not to have been reflected under the current FPI draft regulations which we have in front of us. And we believe that at subsequent point in time, as and when the regime is rolled out, we would see different risk-based KYC norms being laid out for different categories of FPIs. Part of the KYC also requires that a designated depository participant not to allow OPEC structures being registered as a foreign portfolio investor, as an FPI. Now, OPEC structure, sort of the way it has been laid out under the regulations, seems to suggest that if there is a lack of transparency on who the ultimate beneficial owners are, or it is difficult for the DDP to deduct who the investors are, then it could be deemed to be a opaque structure. Similarly, structures where there is ring fencing of liabilities or ring fencing of investments between different sets of beneficial owners could be deemed to be a structure where the DDP is not comfortable to give a registration. My colleague Pradhibha will also later on deal as an issue on the different circulars that were brought out by SEBI in case of PCC structures or SPC structures and SEBI's views on it. With that, I believe we would have discussed and fairly understood what the entire regime under the FPI regulations sort of purports and what the regime for portfolio investors in India going forward looks like. And we will be happy to take questions later on in case you have any specific clarifications to seek on the registration processes or the way the DDP would sort of interact with applicants at the time of both making an application and at the time of monitoring their day-to-day investments. I would hand over to Pratibha, who would now bring out and take discussions on the different nuances and issues that seem to be, you know, arising out of the provisions of the FPI regulations, and where there could be a distinction between what the FPI regulations sort of indicated and what the FPI regulations bring about, and where the confusions could arise. Over to you, Pratibha.
Thanks, Riti. Going over the key issues that we felt while reading the draft regulations, I think the first most important concern in everybody's mind is with respect to the timing for the SEBI proposed regulation. SEBI has, as we mentioned earlier, approved the draft in the board meeting. However, in the board meeting, the board had given authorization to the chairman to take all necessary steps, including allowing different dates for different provisions of these regulations to be implemented. What it does provide through this is there's been concern raised by a lot of participants with respect to rollover of the current regime into the new regime and effect on their businesses. And in our discussions with SEBI, you know, it's been amply clarified that, you know, this is something that they have taken also very seriously. And if there are any concerns with respect to the rollover from the current regime to the proposed regime, you know, SEBI would work with the current participants in the market to ensure that there is a smooth transitioning. Of course, they have, under the regulations, grandfathered all the existing FIs, QFIs, and sub-accounts, which should, in our view, ensure that whatever businesses they were able to undertake currently under the new regime, they would be able to undertake it too. So, for example, for existing sub-accounts, most of them would have come under either a broad-based criteria or would have an investment advisor who meets a broad-based criteria, and they would now fall under a Category 2 FPI. And in that sense, be able to not only invest as an FPI, but be able to issue ODIs in that category itself. I think SEBI's done a very good job in ensuring that the current regime and people who are registered under the current regime are not negatively affected by the proposed regime. It's a regime that liberalizes the investment into listed securities in India by foreign investors and brings into ambit the individual investors who probably couldn't have taken benefit of the regime and streamlines the whole regime, which I think does a good job. Secondly, I guess the key issue was with respect to who is covered under the FPI regime. The Chandrasekhar Committee had recommended that FVCIs and NRIs be excluded, which was something that UK Sinha committee had suggested that they be brought into the same ambit. But SEBI seems to have kept FVCIs out of the regime, which is good because it's a completely separate regime for venture capitalists and PE investments into both listed and unlisted. There is still, it seems, under the regulations, a little bit of confusion around non-resident investors and whether or not they can invest through the FPI regime. The regulation itself under Section 22.8 allows for a FPI it says that no FPI shall make investments simultaneously as an FPI and a NRI under the Portfolio Investment Scheme route. So it's recognizing that NRIs are kept separate under the Portfolio Investment route. And it seems to suggest that you can choose either or, which means that if you choose to come through the NRI route, then you can't come through the FPI route. However, if you want to come through the FPI route, you can give up your NRI route under the PIS scheme. However, the form seeks a declaration that you are not a non-resident Indian, which seems to suggest that if you are an NRI, you're automatically prohibited from coming under this regime, which seems to be an anomaly, and we'll have to, you know, raise this with SEBI and see, you know, which of the two they intended to do. I think, in our view, it would be preferable that they keep what's in the regulation, which is the option for the NRI investor to opt out or stay coming through the FPI regime. The other key issue, as Richie mentioned, is even though the Chandrasekhar committee report had suggested a risk-based KYC approach under the regulations, that have not found their way into the regulations themselves, which was a bit of a surprise for us because that's something that SEBI got a lot of, the Chandrasekhar committee itself got a lot of accolade for. And it's a demand that the industry has been making for a while. Of course, the PMLA regulations are still applicable even if they had incorporated these, and the procedural requirements under the PMLA regulations would still have to be met. However, you know, putting the risk-based approach and under the Chandrasekhar committee report, just to outline how they had looked at the three categories of FPIs that have been allowed and accordingly put high risk, medium risk, and low risk, depending on CAT 3, CAT 2, and CAT 1 of FPI, and allowed a higher or a lower standard depending on which category you came in terms of the KYC requirements. I guess we'll wait and watch, and hopefully this does get incorporated finally, you know, this is definitely a demand that the industry has been making for a while. Then I think another very important change that we found in the proposed regulations was with respect to the look-through provisions and the on how that affects the broad-based criteria being met, and also the less than 45% requirement that was there in the previous regime compared to the new regime. Now, if you may recall, under the previous regime, if you had an institutional investor coming through the FII regime, then even if the institutional investor didn't have didn't meet the broad-based criteria, i.e., have 20 investors, that was okay if you had an institutional investor. And if then that institutional investor had more than 49%, then it had to be broad-based. That distinction has been done away. And as with any new regulation, there's a lot of scope in terms of how we reach the current provisions with respect to the look-through. So if we look at Section 4 and the explanation provided for what broad-based means, it reads to say, shall mean a fund established or incorporated outside India which has at least 20 investors with no investor holding more than 49% of shares or units of a fund. And then B says, for the purposes of clause A of this explanation, for ascertaining the number of investors in a fund, direct investors as well as underlying investors shall be considered. Now, if you read A and B together, one conclusion is that if I have more than 20 investors on a look-through basis, so even if I have a 100% owned entity at the top, which then has on a look-through basis either institutional investor or various individual investors who then together hold do not hold more than 49 singly don't hold more than 49%, then as long as they don't hold more than 49% individually, even if they're all singly individual investors and not institutional investors, the look-through will work and it would be considered a broad-based fund. The other interpretation would be that you take a strict interpretation and you read B only for look-through in terms of 20 investors, which means that if at the FPI level itself, I have two investors, one of them holds 40% and the other holds 60%, even if the 60% is then held broadly, the requirement of less than 49% has not been met for each investor. So we'll have to wait and see which of the two approaches SEBI takes, because this is one of the key deviations from the previous regime, which has not been before discussed in either of the committee reports. The other significant change, as Rishji mentioned, was now instead of registering directly with SEBI, you have to register with the depository participants. And there's significant amount of discretion under the regulations that has been given to the depository participants. Depository participants can actually require you to physically come for due diligence. They diligence you. And there are other requirements, discretions that have been provided to the DDPs under the Act, which would probably make the job for DDPs very difficult, because there's always a conflict of interest for DDPs while doing, such a regulatory work, especially if discretion is provided. Because for them to just do procedural stuff is easier, but once you have discretion, they would have to apply the discretion to people who are potentially all our existing clients, which lead to significant conflict of interest issues. So I think we'd have to wait and watch how the DDPs actually apply these provisions, specifically on the KYC, the procedural requirements to be met. It'll be a wait and watch to how stringent the DDPs are in terms of meeting these requirements. Another anomaly in the Act is with respect to the declaration required that you're not a protected cell company or a segregated portfolio company, or as we know them as PCCs or SPCs. There was some hope that this restriction, which has been widely discussed in the industry, would be done away with under the new regulations. Only yesterday, SEBI released a circular which recognizes that if the law of the host country from where the foreign investor is coming requires that you set up in the form of a SPC or a PCC, which means that you're required to create segregated accounts which are ring-fenced, then SEBI would allow such entities to register as FPIs, which is a significant clarification that's come from SEBI, because this has been a key issue for companies, specifically for funds coming through UK, where this was a requirement that the regulators had. But for a contractually, this has obviously not yet found a way into the current draft regulation. We are hoping that this gets added by SEBI since it's already allowed under the current regime. But also it would have been helpful if they had allowed for contractually segregating and ring-fencing of accounts, because it's an internationally accepted standard. The other issue has been with respect to the various amendments that are required. So in the board meeting itself, SEBI has recognize that some of the SEBI acts need to be amended, that they need to do, including the ICDR regulations, takeover regulation, intermediary regulations, etc. But there are other acts that will need to be amended, notably the Income Tax Act and FEMA, both of which explicitly recognize the previous FII regime and the QFII regime. There have been newspaper reports that it's because of the amendment of the Income Tax Act that the whole regime has been delayed. However, SEBI has allowed or has a deeming provision under the current regulations that deem for an FI for the purposes of Income Tax Act and for FEMA till the time the FPI regime is recognized under such provisions to deem to include FPIs. But I think they would want to ensure that both the regulators are in sync with this, with the proposed regulations before they go ahead and implement this. And then I think lastly, the current regime allows, as I mentioned before, for sub-accounts to come, for sub-accounts that have been either broad-based or their advisors have been broad-based, to now register as an FPI, which means that under the previous regulations, as a sub-account, you could get away without having to do a lot of the registration compliances, continuing disclosure requirements under the FII regulations. However, now, since the sub-account regime has been done away with, all of these funds will have to necessarily, if they want to invest in Indian securities, come through the FPI regime and meet the disclosure requirements and the registration requirements under the regulations, which will be more cumbersome for some of these funds, but then the upside is that they can do a lot more in terms of how they structure their ODIs and take responsibility for their own investments rather than looking for an FII registration, and also not have to club their limits with the FIIs. I think with that, we'll summarize our discussion, and we'll open the floor for any questions people may have. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who has a question at this time may press star and one. Thank you. As a reminder to all participants, please press star and one at this time to ask questions. First question from the line of Ankit Sharad from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Hi. If you could please help in explaining the bit again regarding the P-note regulations and how the regulations might vary. I remember there's an example used for a commodities regulator. If you could just touch on that again, that was a bit that I didn't understand. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. So to
As far as the ODIs are concerned, I thought the law seems to be pretty much in sync with what the regime was under the FII sub-account regulations. To begin with, there would be a KYC performed, but at the same time, you have to demonstrate to be eligible that you are an appropriately regulated entity. To do this, you would also have to sort of demonstrate that you are sort of regulated by a securities regulator or a banking regulator. In this respect, even commodity regulators have been recognized. I thought the only distinction is that as a issuer or a holder of ODI, you would not be a Category 3 FPI to that extent. So pretty much the regime seems to be in line with what was there earlier as far as the ODIs themselves are concerned. Does that answer your question, or is there some more subtext to it?
No, that helps. Thank you.
I think just to add to that, I think one thing to keep into consideration is for anybody that wants to come through Category 3 FPI, which includes your individuals, endowment funds, charitable organizations, universities, etc., they would have to again choose. They would either, if they want to come through ODIs, then they can't take an FPI registration. If they take an FPI registration, then they cannot do ODIs. And, you know, if they want to switch over, they'll have to give up their FPI registration because it's a perpetual registration under the new regulations.
And this wasn't the case earlier, if I'm right to understand.
That's right, because the Category 3 that they've added, it is a liberalization because earlier they would not come under, if they came under any category, they would be only sub-accounts. But most of them, including individuals, wouldn't even come under that category. So the only option they had were ODIs, which is an option a lot of individuals do take. They don't like, giving the kind of details that SEBI requires for registration as an FII or an FPI or even as a sub-account, because you go through the beneficial ownership level in terms of the details that you have to give, and the details are quite cumbersome. You have to give your passport details, etc. So there's still a lot of people who have preferred to come through the ODI route and take exposure to the Indian markets through ODI route. They just have to be very careful, even though there's liberalization and now you can come through the FPI route. Is that something that you really want?
Right, thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder to all participants, please press star and 1 at this time to ask questions. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have questions, please press star and 1 at this time. As a reminder to all participants, please press star and 1 at this time to ask questions. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have questions, please press star and 1 at this time to ask questions. As there are no further questions, I now hand the conference over to Pratibha Jain, partner, Nishit Desai Associates. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank everybody to have dialed in on a Friday night. We just wanted to ensure we got a summary of the key provisions in before the holiday season began and people can enjoy their holidays with some peace of mind. So happy holidays to everybody, and thank you once again for dialing in.
Thank you. On behalf of Nishit Desai Associates, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.